Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are joined by Ben Costa and James Parks. Ben and James are the creators of the graphic novels Rickety Stitch and the Gelatinous Goo, the middle grade book series The Dungeoneer Adventures, and most recently, the tabletop role-playing game based on both, The Land of Eem. Ben and James, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah, it's so good to have you.
We're really excited to talk to you about this game.
We're excited to be here.
So we are so excited to kind of deep dive into The Land of Eem. And of course, The Land of Eem is not just this game. The Land of Eem is the setting of these two previous projects you've both worked on, the result of like a sort of lifelong collaboration. Over the course of this conversation, we'll get into adapting that IP and kind of how you've made this really like friendly RPG for all experience levels and really like thought about it in some different ways. But where I want to start is the start. Where did the Land of Eem begin? Where did this place come from?
Well, James and I have known each other since the second grade. So it really started all the way back then when we were like 8 or 9 years old. Not officially. We didn't not the actual world of Land of Eem. But we started collaborating that young. We started making comics together. We would make Spider-Man comics. And one funny thing that we always like to say is that one of the first comics we made also featured Shaquille O'Neal and Spider-Man teaming up to fight crime in New York.
Which has launched like a series of questions about Shaquille O'Neal whenever we do school visits across the country. Just the first question is, do you know Shaquille O'Neal? And is there going to be a movie?
Very good. The answer to those questions is no. But yeah, we've always been collaborating, and we also have always played role-playing games. Started out with Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. We've been playing with the same group for our entire lives.
Whoa. So.
Wow.
Whoa, that's amazing. I got to stop great. And we got to really admire that.
Yeah. We just remain friends the whole time, and you know, we always make it a point at least to play once a year when we get together on a vacation, get like an Airbnb. Sometimes we're able to play like during the rest of the year in an online campaign.
Yeah, we're just two parts of a group that's been hanging out together since we were in the second grade, and we're the Land of Eem parts.
That's so awesome.
You know what? Congratulations on that. That's amazing.
That's really good. Same, any continuation from when you were young? Like, are you in any campaign that is like still story connected to when you were kids?
You know, not specifically story connected, but there's like mountains of material that we bring up, not in a cohesive way. Usually just like we try to shoehorn things in to make each other laugh.
But nice.
But we have spreadsheets, vast spreadsheets that make mention of NPCs and characters and plot points from decades ago.
Yeah. And our friend Amir, who is the basically forever dungeon master in that group.
Thank you for your service, Amir.
We got to give him a lot of credit for like instilling a love of games and game design in us, because he was the one who like started creating his own games, and that rubbed off on us.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, thank you to Amir for starting this story off.
Yeah, shout out Amir.
Shout out Amir. If you're listening, we love you. And so how does this collaboration create this setting that is first of these graphic novels and middle grade books, but then what we're getting to today is a tabletop game? Where does this world begin for the two of you?
Yeah, that's a great question. The world really began when Ben and I got into comics, actually. We were really inspired by comics, and we both wrote comics. Ben also is an artist and a cartoonist, and he's done his own graphic novels. And we sort of have always been making stories together since we were kids. And we had this idea about telling the tale of a skeleton bard, basically a character with amnesia who would be thrust into this fantasy world that would kind of play with all the tropes of high fantasy and have our own sensibilities in there, which is, a quantum amount of goofballery.
There's the episode title.
Land of Eve. Goofballery in tow. Yeah, and so we wanted to create this world that represented our sensibilities and put thrust heroes into the perspective that is not always available, like not common. And so get this wacky skeleton guy, Rickety Stitch, who's on this epic quest to discover who he was when he was alive. And it all really started with character. And as we developed the story of Rickety Stitch, the world began to naturally develop to the point where it got out of hand. It got really huge. And now the Land of Eem is giant. And you know, the first setting in the game is just the Mucklands realm, which in the Rickety Stitch series is, and I'm holding up my fingers, is like an inch long of his travels. And we found ourselves developing the world more and more to, which actually became a tool for Ben and I to use when we're telling the stories in the first place, because now there's this living world that exists and these characters, their own individual conflicts and story arcs now have this massive backdrop that could potentially impact them in fun or perilous ways.
And as you were going through this process of, you know, you have this graphic novel and this middle grade series, and you're slowly building out this world more and more. You'd been playing tabletop role-playing games for a long time as kids, and all through this amount of time with the same group. I just want to keep highlighting how cool that is and how jealous I am. At what point did you both look at each other and say, oh, we have to make a game? Like, this is we now need to make a tabletop role-playing game.
I think it was pretty early on. I think we started... it was originally like the Rickety Stitch RPG, and that was 2014. And I had also made a game based on one of my comics, and I was also making my own Star Wars game, because I was playing a lot of Star Wars RPG. And so I just like decided to make my own, and that was a huge undertaking that I spent a lot of time on. So there was like some game design groundwork going on there. And then once James and I were like publishing Rickety Stitch, it came out in 2017, the first graphic novel. So before that, we were like already working on it a lot.
Yeah, it in many ways it was hand in hand, just us pursuing two different interests at the same time, and then they collided in spectacular fashion.
It's surprising that we have talked to a couple of people now who have had similar things where they've made
this is our third, I think.
This is our third, like, we had Kieran Gillen on the show who made the Die RPG and the Die comic at the same time. And we also spoke with A.A. Voigt, who made a novel and a role-playing game at the same time, Detente for the Ravenous. I wouldn't have thought that was such a, I don't want to say common thing, but it's more than I would have expected.
Three nickels are weird kind of thing.
Yeah, nickels are weird thing. Yeah. But I guess the more I think about it, the more I'm like, of course this makes sense. You're delving so much into a world that adding game mechanics on top of it isn't that big of a thing. It's not the hugest hurdle in the world. You've done a lot of the hard work of making this great world.
And like I said, it in many ways it becomes this like super creative and fun tool that Ben and I are able to utilize when we're working on a structured narrative like a Dungeoneer Adventure series or a Rickety Stitch series. It just makes this backdrop that is literally this sandbox that we get to play in.
Yeah, it's kind of like writing each story as playing one session or one campaign in that world, but you obviously know there's more world beyond it in your mind already and in the prep you've done.
So to give you an idea, James and I, we put out one sandbox so far, the Mucklands, and we're almost done with the Underlands, which is like the subterranean world below the Mucklands. But we have ideas and plans for like 10 other sandboxes. And
that's awesome.
We're constantly thinking about characters and stories that can happen in these other realms. Like, we've already started writing a couple other stories in other realms. And once we have those stories kind of, you know, written, then it makes working on a sandbox so much easier because we have that foundation for it.
It comes together beautifully in a way. Like, working on the Underlands recently, it was the perfect match for the Dungeoneer Adventures because the entire series takes place in the Underlands, but there was no specific representation of it in the game yet. And there's all these places that are mentioned in the stories that Ben and I haven't gone deep on yet. And so when he says we have 10 sandboxes planned, he's not kidding, because there's just so much material that hasn't been touched for the game that is already brewing in the series.
It's funny. It kind of leads me to this question of, like, I imagine you know, we hear about adapting IP into games sometimes, and you're really adapting your own IP and, like, something that you love and you know. And the question I was going to ask, and it's how do you decide what to take with you into the game adaptation and what to leave behind? And based on 10 sandbox incoming, maybe you don't leave anything behind, but I'm curious kind of how you think about that.
It's all gold, baby.
Well, the "it's all gold, baby" is not super inaccurate, because there's a lot of stuff that we find funny or that gives us joy particularly, that may not be like the perfect thing to add to the game, but we must have it because it would be at our table. And that's how we approach it all. It's like the entire Land of Eem is approached at what Ben and I would like at our table. It's our sensibility. It's like we're writing this for ourselves first, which is, we believe, the way to do anything. Like, make it for yourself. It's your time. It's your funness.
I also think you might have it reversed. Like, we sort of think of it as like, what is good enough to go into a story, or like what is more important enough to go into the story? If not, let's throw it into the sandbox.
That's certainly true.
And because the sandbox has so many stories.
We often joke that, like, it's like we'll finish like a quest hook or an idea or a location. We'll be like, that should be a series. Like, this whole thing should be a series, because there's just so many like things that we find interesting, or the characters are interesting, or the conflicts are interesting. But then, you know, there's no time to write, you know, 20 series at a time. So we have to let it exist in the sandbox to be pursued by players and GMs.
Let them write their own series.
Subtly guide them towards those good stories. Yeah. That's so interesting. You kind of have this like Ouroboros of adaptation of the game feeding back into the stories now, because I imagine you're continuing to work on stories and they're sort of circling back into each other. That's great.
Always. Yeah.
I want to start talking about some more specifics about this game and like get into the mechanics and stuff. But one of the things that really impressed me, really excited me about this game, was on literally the first page of real text. And it's, you guys have a great, it's the second paragraph, and it's, Land of Eem is designed to value creativity, role-playing, and exploration. Here are a few of the game's core principles. And you list out four of the game's core principles. I'm just going to summarize them real quick, but character abilities allow players to invent and shape the world around them. Characters earn XP not by slaying monsters, but by role-playing and exploring. While getting into fights as part of the game, characters can almost always have opportunities to talk their way out of it, and all monsters and creatures are people. And Land of Eem is about player-driven exploration, and random encounters are a core part of the game. I've read a lot of role-playing games. I've rarely seen one in the first page so succinctly tell you this is what the game is about. Like, if you like these four things, you're going to like this game. Why did you guys feel it was so important, and why those four core tenets for this game?
That was actually a pretty late addition to the core rulebook, but we felt like, why beat around the bush? Let's just say what we're about so people could not misunderstand what we're going for.
I think it's important to set expectations really, really with anything. It's like, this is what this is about, is a pretty important thing. And even when we're working on adventures or other elements of the game, it's about making that accessible really early so that you can find the right audience and the right audience can find you.
For instance, in our quests and adventures, we have like three categories that we put them into, so people know exactly what is the tone of the adventure. So we've got hijinks adventures and daring do adventures and doom and gloom. So you don't just accidentally stumble into a doom and gloom adventure when, you know, maybe you're playing with kids or you just don't feel like running a serious adventure that day.
Because it would be kind of unsatisfying and maybe even awful to think, okay, we're going to run the Great Muppet Caper and then it's Conan the Barbarian. So,
right.
You guys are really touching on a thing that we come back to a lot on the show, and that is like being intentional about something is really important, and setting up expectation is so important, because when there is a mismatch of expectation, that's where tension most often occurs in tabletop role-playing games and just in life. Like, if your buddy says, hey, let's go to a movie, and you're expecting to see Terminator and you see Titanic, even if you would have liked Titanic, you're going to be kind of pissed that you're not seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger saying hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah, right. This tension of tones is sort of core to Land of Eam and Rickety Stitch, where it's got this, what we say is the Muppets meets the Lord of the Rings. And so you look at the art, which is sometimes pretty colorful and cheery, and then you expect one thing, but we want to be sure to also say, hey, well, this is like a hex crawl. There's lots of exploration and random encounters. So it's not just like a total freeform creativity fest, though there is lots of creativity. It's like a melding of kind of two sometimes opposite things.
That tonal shift, that ability to be what you want it to be for your group is a really core element of Land of Eam. And we do our best to pay off the Lord of the Rings meets the Muppets, because Ben and I were inspired by, you know, things like Bone, where it's a cartoon, but it's also taking place in a high fantasy world where there are real stakes. And these heroes are unexpected heroes, like the hobbits are unexpected heroes fighting a dark lord and the machinations of a literal like demon god king.
Yeah, we're hearing all the time from players that they were sort of pleasantly surprised how dangerous it can get from like all the adversaries. Some of them are deadly.
Yeah, there are lots of deadly adversaries, and that is on purpose, because in Land of Eam, it is about the creative solution. And often that creative solution is not going to be a slugfest with a dragon or a lich. It's going to be a heroic, creative solution to defeating these creatures, which is going to be very satisfying at the table when your cockamamie idea turns into tossing a... Because nobody, you know, punches Sauron in the face. They figure out that if they toss a little ring into a volcano, that's it. And it's right, amazing.
Right. Also, so, it's completely valid to run. And we want to make that clear too.
Run away.
Like you can run away, regroup, find some magic items to help you, and then come back and
come back with a plan now that you've faced the big bad. And so that's a core element of it, because I think it actually helps create heroic moments. It helps create fun moments, hilarious moments, so that you're not just, you know, how do I have enough hit points to fight this? Do I do enough damage to fight this? It's like, no, but if I get that chandelier to fall on his head, that could be something, right? And so that's what the Land of Eam's all about.
In our current game, actually, the group is trying to deal with a Gwargle beast, which is one of the most deadly adversaries you can face. It's a giant creature that lives in the Underlands, has covered in armored plating. And they did try to fight it the first time, and they just got whooped. Like, it was almost a TPK. So now they've regrouped, and they're like gathering up all the local peoples to form a militia, basically, and they're going to try to lure it away, like back into the Underlands, I think is their current plan. So that's the kind of game that we're going for.
To give another example that I think is topical, because it actually is drawn from a random encounter specifically, is there are different kinds of encounters in Land of Eam, and there's a lot of them. I think there's like over 1,000 random encounters that are in the that are currently available. Plus, we're working on more for the Underlands. But we rolled a perilous encounter, which is the most dangerous and deadly encounter that you can possibly have. And it happened to be like a sleeping dragon on a mountainside that was very unimpressed by everything that we were trying to do. And this could easily have turned into a party wipe if not handled properly. And so in our game, we negotiated a business deal with the dragon, because my character is a tycoon class. And so I'm trying to make a gumball empire, and I got this dragon to invest in it, you know, for a significant share of the business to add to his treasure hoard. And so now I'm fulfilling my own character's personal quest of becoming the Gumball King, but you know, I've also got to deal with this dragon on the side, and we survived the first time, but hopefully everything goes right with the business. And it just adds these, you know, off the wall elements that mix the humor and the peril, which is always how Ben and I play whenever we pursue danger, we pursue the chaos and the conflicts, because that's what ultimately for us as storytellers makes that better story.
It feels like all of these things you're talking about, of like these alternate solutions and like every NPC monster is a person. It's inherently, this game is in conversation with D&D and your probably like decades of experience playing it. I'm curious, like, were these things that you rubbed up against in D&D, or were they things that your group just did to D&D that then you were like, no, this should be the core of the game when we make our game?
I think there was stuff that we rubbed up against playing D&D for two decades or whatever. And some of it was, well, can we talk to the goblins? No, they don't.
No, that doesn't.
Can we have a conversation and not have a 3-hour fight now? I think that was the biggest one. But I think our group also naturally gravitated towards not playing that way. And so our group mentality rubbed off on James and I, where we were taking a lighter tone and not always fighting everything. And we're getting into more silly situations with our home group. And part of that was because our friend Amir, who coincidentally is one of the founders of Supergiant Games. So he's like a genius
game designer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He made his own system. And so we haven't actually played an official edition of D&D since
decades, right? Like forever.
Like high school, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. We've been playing our own homebrew forever.
It's the talk of the table.
Midnight Muscadines is a cozy, dark tabletop role-playing game where light and shadow intertwine in a fractured world. Players take on the roles of Marmiteers, brave adventurers who journey into the untamed Wildernight to collect the elusive Midnight Muscadines, craft magical jams, and protect the fragile light of Nim. Through collaborative storytelling and resourceful gameplay, players weave tales of courage, community, and the pursuit of balance. Will you preserve the light, uncover the truths hidden in the shadows, or reshape the balance of the world forever? Midnight Muscadines is perfect for fans of Studio Ghibli and Sea of Stars, who seek to capture the magic of exploration and the heartfelt adventure in a world where small heroes make a big impact. Play Midnight Muscadines as a traditional GM'd game, GM-less, or even solo. Midnight Muscadines is crowdfunding now on BackerKit. Join the campaign at pandeongames.com/muscadines.
I'm Quinns of Tabletop Role-Playing Game Review Show, Quinns Quest, and this is Play to Find Out. Play to Find Out is an actual play podcast that brings notorious old games from the 80s and 90s back to the table. Each season of Play to Find Out, I'm joined by Emily Johnson and Rob Morgan.
Good? Nervous?
Yeah.
You both looked at each other really concerned, like you think what's about to happen is going to be unpleasant. And frankly, I think that's rude.
And together, we explore the TTRPGs of ages gone by. Our goal? To separate the TTRPGs that deserve to be remembered from those that maybe don't.
Can I
don't know, Emily. It was the 80s. A lot of people were on cocaine. We blow the dust from decrepit systems to learn how they work.
Your 100 on the encounter table bursts out. Right, you've encountered a fog. Get ready. Don't laugh.
How does one get ready for a fog?
Don't laugh.
Encounter their unique quirks.
I do finger guns to cover up how I wince.
A weird thing happens as you do finger guns.
Oh, no.
And I'm hoping that the Quinns Quest community will join us in exploring these games too.
If you f*** this up, cannot describe to you how much your adventure ends here.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because the best way to learn is to play to find out. Play to Find Out is available now on the Quinn's Quest Patreon, but the first episode of each series streams for free on the Quinn's Quest YouTube channel and wherever you get your podcasts. Anyway, you failed the Earth Tech roll, so, and you made jokes while I was doing my exposition, so you don't get to hear any more.
No. Come on.
I was shooketh.
We've mentioned it a couple times of every monster, every creature is a person. And another thing that really struck me in this book, again, in like the first 12 pages of this book, there's a section called Playing the Game that has two columns. One is the player's role and the GM's role. And it lists like very clearly of like what you should be thinking of doing in really clear and succinct ways that I really, really love. These are the kind of pages I love to see in a tabletop role-playing game. But under the GM's role, the first thing is strive to make every NPC and creature a person. Whether or not it is first because it is the most important, it ended up being first. Why did that become such a key thing for you? Because it seems like that is a very big part of this game.
I think it goes back to our storytelling proclivities, where if we had Rickety Stitch encounter a manticore, for instance, Rickety Stitch would definitely talk to the manticore and have a conversation and avoid fighting. Because the funny thing, in three books, there's a lot of fighting that happens, but Rickety Stitch never fights anyone. Ever. Not once. Yeah. Once.
And not for nothing, he's a skeleton, which like in traditional fantasy is not a chatty sort of character.
Yeah, he's always getting pelted with rocks or running away or, you know, someone's leaping into his defense.
Wrapped into someone else's high fantasy quest suddenly for a brief moment.
And he's grabbed by an ogre and almost squeezed to death, but he manages to, you know, play a beautiful tune that captures the ogre's attention. So we're really just going for things like that.
From my perspective, it layers the game and the experience with a sort of fairy tale quality that doesn't always come through, even though so many fantasy RPGs exist. Very few have the actual feeling of a fairy tale, if from my experience. And so by making everything a person, it just sort of flips a switch on what the tone might actually be. In the Land of Eem, there are some creatures that are evil, that are fiends, that cannot be engaged in the same way that you would expect. But there are so many abilities or items or things that can be integrated into the game that give you a chance to, you know, talk to those as well. And so it's, you get a plethora of different types of experiences by making everybody a person that is like just represents how Ben and I play ourselves.
I am kind of thinking to my own times of playing role-playing games, and it's very rare that the story that I recount to people is I did a great combo move on the big bad dragon. It's usually like, right. Yeah, we talked to this guy in the tavern and we made him do this and we were able to get the lost thing of this guy for a song.
Yeah, and the combat just gets, you know, lost in the shuffle. It doesn't even come up. Maybe a critical hit every once in a while at some key moment is talked about. But
yeah, I mean, I will never forget when I
I knew you were going to bring this up.
I knew you were going to bring this up. I've been waiting for this to talk about this for decades.
Well, this was a Star Wars campaign, but the big bad had finally confronted us, and I just immediately, the first attack, just chopped him in half with a lightsaber.
Very good. Very good.
The dice gods were with you.
It was pretty satisfying, but Amir didn't like it.
No,
I bet not. That's
funny.
Really funny. It's so funny. It's like, it's very clear that you both have such a love for games like that comes through both in how you talk about them and also in the design of this game. This feels like a game when you're reading it where you're like, the people that wrote this love games and want you to love games as much as they do. So just like that really shines through kind of in all of these things. It's like you didn't have to give all of these pieces of advice, but like the fact that you did shows that it's like, hey, we love the kinds of experience we have. We want you to have the same one. And like, you don't have to play games in this way that you've maybe been shown in other games. You can have fun. You can have, what is it, quantum loads of goofballery.
Well, thanks a lot. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's very nice of you to say.
Yeah. It's like the other thought that I was struck by when you were talking is like, it's interesting because it feels like D&D and like traditional role-playing, fantasy role-playing was born out of people who love a specific kind of IP, like Lord of the Rings, like Game of Thrones, like Wheel of Time. But there's a whole group of people who were like Dark Crystal fans and Neverending Story and like The Princess Bride and then like 90s and 2000s cartoons. And it feels like you're speaking to those fantasy fans who maybe don't always get spoken to by these like more traditional fantasy games. Are you like fans of those? Like what are your like touchstones other than like Muppets and Lord of the Rings that you feel like are Land of Eam stories if you had to identify them?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Dark Crystal and Labyrinth especially were huge. Princess Bride is certainly one of our touchstones. We both love the original Star Wars trilogy.
So many things.
Conan the Barbarian.
Conan, yeah. That's an odd one, but like it's actually like the Conan the Barbarian movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger is very dear to Ben and I's hearts.
We're like always referencing it to each other, like when we're coming up with stories, like, oh, you know, like in Conan, we're like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And that always surprises people because Conan is so like far from what people perceive the Land of Eam to be. Although we always joke that in Proto Eam, it was more like Conan and that like this is like what has inherited the earth.
if you haven't rewatched Conan the Barbarian, the first one, it's actually really poetic and like a deep movie. There's a lot going on under the surface.
Yeah, it's much more than what folks really think of it.
I have to admit, I've never watched Conan.
I've also never seen it.
I recommend it. We envy you.
We envy you.
Get to go experience it for the first time.
Adding it to the list.
I'm gonna go watch out. There's a couple of like old timey theaters near me that do like reruns of old movies. So maybe sometime soon I'll be able to get to see it at theater or something.
All right, fine. Our first gotcha question. Why the D12?
Why the D12?
Well,
I mean,
it's an underused die, you know?
Criminally underused die. Who doesn't love rolling the D12?
So that's the first reason.
First reason is 100% emotional.
yeah. No, that I was hoping.
Like, the first reason is 100. The second reason is a little bit more mechanical.
Yeah, it because of the swinginess, it's not 2d6 where you're getting a bell curve. It's still retaining you could roll a 1 or a 12. And we wanted that option to exist because we also wanted failure to happen more because that'll lead to more interesting things than just always succeeding or always getting a success with a twist. Having the full gradation of success and failure more often.
Yeah, and like I think I said this earlier, but Ben and I love to pursue conflicts because we're storytellers at heart. Like conflict is what drives a story and generates character growth and change, right? So the idea of the D12 being able to inflict more conflict in theory and have those uh-oh, what do we do now moments is exactly the kind of gameplay that we leave the table telling stories about when we turned it around or when we had to do this totally different thing that we hadn't conceived of to solve this problem. So that's the mechanical reason why we chose the D12.
I find myself always loving any kind of single die system because it does give you that nat 1, nat 20 feel of huzzah. Like, I've got the best number. I've got the worst number. That dice pool systems, it never quite hits the same way.
Right. That's so true. I had never thought of it that way, but I cheer every time I see a 12.
I think it's the thing that a lot of games need. You need that moment of like instant everyone realizes what's happening. Like, I don't have to see your character sheet to know what's going on. You rolled a 12. I know good things are happening. There's a lot of stuff in this book, and I flipped through a lot of it, but not all of it. And I want to talk about some of the crazy classes and monsters and things. Can you guys just give us a word, kind of like a word dump, word vomit of all the things that you can play in this game?
Well, we've got the bard, and that is totally influenced by Rickety Stitch the Bard. and we wanted to make the bard very creative, making up songs, sort of narrating the world around you, and also being a healer, like your music heals everyone.
Very much thematic with the Rickety Stitch series.
Yeah, and then to go along with Rickety Stitch, there's the gelatinous goo, who's his best friend, always by his side. They sort of got a R2-D2, C-3PO vibe going on. And the class that we based on the gelatinous goo is the loyal chum. And so you can also think of like Samwise Gamgee.
The heart of the party.
He's there for you. The loyal chum is the glue. They're picking up the slack, letting you re-roll rolls and also healing you, just being great at cooking and that type of stuff.
I'm pretty sure it was seeing the loyal chum as a character class that I was like, oh, this game's for me. Yeah. That was the moment. Yeah. Everything before then, I was like, this is cool. Loyal chum. Yes, nailed it. That's the thing I want.
Then we got the Dungeoneer, which has sort of changed over time, but it's always retained just like a stalwart adventurer who knows their way around, you know, dungeons, and they've got a crew of NPCs that they can call on.
Their own little explorer team, which is, you know, Dungeoneer Adventures obviously deals with the Dungeoneer Academy, where kids go to the school to learn how to become explorers in the land of Eem, and that's obviously they're connected.
What's funny is that the Dungeoneer started off more like corporate.
Yeah.
which is more based on what is in Rickety Stitch. But then when we wrote Dungeoneer Adventures, we're like, we got to change this. And so it's more, you know, bringing that Indiana Jones vibe.
Yeah. And like in the times of yore, in ancient times long ago, before Rickety Stitch was a graphic novel series, the original Rickety Stitch like comics that we did were a little edgier, and they had lots of corporate humor in them because he worked in this dungeon and it was like kind of crappy and he was always feeling crummy about his boss, and his boss was a taskmaster instead of a, you know, district manager or whatever. And there was a lot of the original Dungeoneer would leaned into that a lot more than where it ended up. But I think it ended up in a fun, great place, because I always kind of want to play a Dungeoneer.
Yeah, and it meets people's expectations more, because I remember some early play tests were like, why can't I do this or this or this as a Dungeoneer? I was like, yeah, you probably should be able to do that.
That's a really good idea. We probably should have thought of that.
Instead, you're just asking your boss for more money.
I need a raise. I need dental.
The classic fantasy ideal is filling out a requisition form. Make sure you tape up your invoices, one per page.
To be fair, though, there's plenty of those jokes still buried into the Mucklands because of just the nature of the setting in that realm.
So then we got the gnome, which is the closest thing to a magic user and sort of a ranger. They're really attuned to the wilderness. And when you're a gnome, like, that's your folk and your class. And only gnomes can be gnomes, obviously. So that's a unique thing there, kind of harkening back to old school D&D. The gnomes in our world are very, they're like a cross between David the Gnome and Gandalf.
Okay.
Like, unsuspectingly powerful and have a different point of view on things that we find really fun. But obviously, they're based off of a gnome in Rickety Stitch named L. Nerman Fuddle, who is much more than what he seems at first glance.
And then we have the rascal, who is the rogue thief, who just has lots of abilities that, you know, let them steal things and get into trouble and get out of trouble and all that type of good stuff.
Some gift of gab stuff that I've always found really fun.
Was that six? Am I missing?
Knight Errant. Yeah, Knight Errant. The Knight Errant is based off of a character in Rickety Stitch named Eppley, who is a Knight Errant. It's the most martial of the characters. They can actually fight, and they have weapons, and they are inspirational as well as rugged, and they're meant to be, you know, a heroic a type of warrior figure that is about more than just, you know, they're not a pit fighter. They're not like a barbarian who is doing their thing. The knight errant is about making a difference in a dangerous world, because one of the artists that we work with always laughs about some of the artwork that he's doing for creatures, because he's like, oh, this looks like really cool, but then reads the descriptions, it's so dangerous. Like, so dangerous. It's like, if Labyrinth, everything wanted to eat you. And we're like, yeah, that's about right.
Why is
so
it
we
smiling?
Got those six core classes. And then on our Patreon, we've already put out two other classes. One of them, James, is playtesting.
Yeah, we're playtesting now. The Tycoon, which is
the Tycoon. Bring in some of that corporate humor back.
Yeah,
in.
Some of that exactly, corporate yes. humor, because we couldn't let go of it. So there's like the Tycoon, which is very like an entrepreneurial, like merchant type character trying to build a business. And then
yeah, he's got guards and sell swords and
a little bit of money.
Items, lots of items.
Lots of, oh, that's true. And the items, I'll linger on the items for a second. The items for the Tycoon are really fun because I am playtesting the Tycoon now and have used the items to such tremendous creative. There's so many ways you can use these. We've got this list of 400 mundane items that you can roll, and all of those items are super fun.
And then the unicorn, who is super fun. It's like the gnome, where a unicorn is a unicorn. That's who you are. And you have lots of magic powers like the gnome. Our unicorns were really influenced by Conan, the barbarian.
legitimately. The in Rickety Stitch, there is a unicorn named Zorgana, who we gave like a sword and sandal high fantasy name of Zorgana for a unicorn.
And she's got like a classic Conan, like, you know,
haircut
with long flowing hair.
Just neon pink. Very stern and stoic like Conan, which we always thought was funny.
So our unicorns are super buff.
That's the only way to draw a unicorn.
Hell yeah. And then you've got these wonderful, and I won't make you name all, but 16 playable folk, which are just a wide, fun variety. Every piece of art that I look at, I'm like, oh, I'd play that one. Well, no, maybe I'd play that one.
There's a lot of fun stuff in this game, is what we're trying to get at here.
Thank you.
Nothing as fun as the Loyal Chum. I'm going to die on the Loyal Chum hill.
Yeah, I mean, James and I come at it not only as game designers, but as like from the point of view of players and what we want as players, you know, because we've got our friend who GMs everything for us when we play with them. And so we're players at heart, and we know players want to be weird classes and strange folk.
So much of Land of Eem is about your personal story and the relationships with the other members of your party. It's actually a mechanic that is part of the character creation process. And having all of these different folk and classes all intermingling with each other create lots of interesting connections between the players. And it's always fun to have, you know, off-the-wall options that still completely thematically fit, because it's not like it's being shoehorned into this world. It's like, no, they exist in this world. There's, you know, a town of them over there, or there you can see how they interact with these different factions. And it just creates a kind of flexibility with character creation that Ben and I love doing. Like we also have a professions system, which allows you to swap abilities every level with, you know, how many of them are there, Ben? How many different professions? It's like astounding amount of abilities. Like
there's 50 something. So it's like over 150 new abilities.
New abilities to use to customize your character. So on top of the first 16 folk, of which there are many
more.
This
is on Patreon, though. This is not in the core book.
That's true. That's on Patreon.
Coming to one of 10 sandboxes soon.
Yeah, coming to the sandbox.
I was going to say, my question is, who doesn't want to play a gelatinous goo?
Yes. I was just looking at that. It's the gelatinous goo or the whalen.
Oh, yeah, awesome. The whalen.
The whale person.
I'm drawn to the shrimp. I really like the shrimp art.
I'm a shrimp guy, too.
Shrimp is very good. Oh, I like the quartal. I love the turtle guy. The mushroom guy.
A fan favorite.
So much good stuff.
We could just name fun things in this book for the next half hour, but I do want to go, I want to point us towards another thing that I really love about the mechanics of this game, and that is your XP system. Because a way that First off, like, you know, just to give us some numbers, to get to level 2, it costs you 4 XP. To get to level 3, it costs you 8 XP. And then you can improve skills with various other XP things. But the way that you're gaining it is a number of, like, very specific bullets that can be triggered once per quest. So things like you gain 1 XP if you complete a quest, if you encounter a new creature, if you have a significant NPC encounter, if you find a magic item or relic. And you also can have it through role-playing ways of building on a relationship, pursuing their personal quest, demonstrate their ideal, demonstrate their flaw. And what's great about having those, having such a clear mechanical reward for playing the game, is that it gives people a reason to, like, try out those things. Like, D&D has bonds and flaws, but no one's really... there's no mechanical reason to use them, so they often get left by the wayside. In Land of Eem, you're getting... that's how you get to level 2.
Yeah, that's how you're rewarded. And it was amazing. When we first ever started playtesting Land of Eem, it was so astounding to us how that impacted the game so quickly. It was suddenly, like, these are super story-driven games with highly engaging interactions with NPCs, becoming invested with the NPCs' own motivations and challenges so that you can help or stop them. And I was personally amazed by how well it ended up working out from the get-go.
I found with games like Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast from Possum Creek Games or Elliot's own game, Rom-Com Drama Bomb, you have those buttons you can push.
Best name ever.
Great name. You have those buttons you can push, and if you don't know what you're doing, if you're uncomfortable with role-playing or something, you kind of just do them almost mechanically. Mm-hmm. But because you're getting this reward loop... sure, you could just kind of, like, spam a thing and just be like, great, I'm going to demonstrate my flaw again. I'm going to keep getting XP for this. But in the process of that, it's just teaching you to play the game. And it's making you want to actually really engage with your character, really engage with the world in a way that's so... how are more games not doing this? Like, it's just great.
Because you can't gain XP by going around and killing monsters and stuff, we thought we should be very clear about what the purpose of the game is. Like, what are you being rewarded for? You're rewarded for traveling and, you know, interacting with the world, exploring, finding magic items, crafting is another one. We have a huge crafting system, so why not reward people for engaging with it if they want,
and being your character. Like, the ideals and flaws always come up, and sometimes they don't get utilized because there's not a great chance or way to do it in a particular session. But, you know, one of my character's flaws, my character's primary flaw right now is I have to criticize someone in power. So, you know, that that can create an instant conflict. But, oh man, I'm so there for it. It's so fun to have everyone at the table just be like, oh, what do you say?
Just so many conflict engines all running at
yes,
the same time.
Yes, conflict engines. That's the best way to put it.
Conflict engines. I like
conflict
that.
Engines. Be the name of your book.
Oh, writing it down.
So, James and Ben, as we start to bring our conversation to a close, even though, God, I want to keep talking about this game, I do want to touch a little bit on how you made this game a reality through this partnership with Exalted Funeral. Just like from like a, let's zoom a little bit out of the creative, although I'm sure it's part of it. How did that partnership with Exalted form? Like, what was the initial pitch you gave them? Like, how did that look like when you got started working with them?
It's a funny story. It actually happened kind of organically and not necessarily on purpose. We had already been heavily working on the game and were intending to launch a crowdfunding campaign ourselves for the project. So we were full steam ahead on Land of Eem.
We already commissioned artists for the cover and, you know, some interior art. So we were like invested in this heavily already.
And then so in the process of hiring someone to edit the books, we connected with Jarrett Crater, who was formerly with Exalted Funeral, but now has got his own publishing company, Space Penguin. Check it out. Also, thank you for the package, Jarrett. And he, as he was working with us on the game, he's like, you know, you should talk to Exalted. Like, they might be really interested in partnering with you guys. So we're like, okay, we'll talk to Ben. So we met with the folks at Exalted, hit it off like instantly. And it just sort of, you know, snowballed from there. And we're glad to be working with them. They produce a lot of great work and they got a great team over there.
They, yeah. Exalted Funeral is putting out so much good stuff. Every time they something comes up with their logo, I'm like, ooh, I'll check this out.
How do you feel that that partnership sort of maybe leveled up the project in a way that obviously you were going to make this game, but like, do you think that there were ways that you can think of that tangibly leveled up the project by working with them?
Oh, yeah. At one point, we were just thinking, maybe this is just PDFs. You know, maybe we don't print everything because there's so much stuff.
Having just seen the mega core rulebook box set that a friend of ours has. Yeah, it seems like, yeah, you've went a little far away from just PDFs.
Yeah, people tend to be, that's always delightful. People tend to be surprised by the volume of material associated with Land of Eem, because you've got, you know, 1,000 pages of core rulebook and bestiary and mucklands, then there's another 1,500 random encounters. You got all these adventures. There's all this supplementary material and more that we're working on now. And so that's always, people are always surprised because they don't really grasp the size of it. And I think with working with Exalted Funeral, it grew a little. Like we started to expand the scope of Land of Eem, and we knew we wanted to work with them on the Underlands pretty early on, and that's been coming along swimmingly. There's a lot to Land of Eem, and we are 100% committed to supporting it with a significant amount of new creative material.
That's what we like to hear. Love to hear that new games are just getting so much support. You know,
reiterating the production on that box set. So beautiful.
Thanks. And the whole team, like, we learned a lot putting that together. I don't think James and I could have done this ourselves, like this output.
There's
like
no
the physical products, it would be just too much.
Yeah, it would be too much. And it would have actually hindered our ability to produce more creative material, because working with Exalted has freed us up quite a bit to actually be writing. And so we're writing a lot more than we would have if we weren't partnered with them. They also helped us deal with all kinds of logistical challenges. I think we started the project at the tail end of COVID. So there was all of these manufacturing issues that had not yet been resolved and were on this huge timeline of basically repairing their own systems as the world came to life again. Without Exalted Funeral, navigating that would have been a nightmare, even more so than it was.
Hell yeah. Brian, do you have anything, or you want to take it to close?
I think anything I'd bring up at this point would send us spiraling for another 20 or 30 minutes. So I think
we'll do another 2 hours next week.
We'll do it again.
We'll Land of Eem after party.
Well, we'd totally be down to do it again. We are launching a new Kickstarter campaign for the Underlands in 2025.
And this one's dear to our hearts, because it's not just an expansion for the Land of Eem, but we're also launching a beginner's RPG for kids that is called Dungeoneer Adventures. And it's all about making tabletop role-playing games accessible to younger kids, because Ben and I, we became new dads over the last 2 years ourselves.
Congratulations to you both.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And we instantly wanted to be able to produce some work that we could play with our own kids as they're growing up. But we wanted something that we would want to run with them, something that was accessible to ourselves, would be easy to run, have kids be invested in it.
And it's completely based on Land of Eem. It's just a streamlined, pared-down version of it.
Yeah. So if you're a parent or an educator and you're GMing the game, you have access to all of the sandbox and other materials that you can just port into the kid mechanics, which is exactly what we wanted to be able to do with our own boys.
That's so cool. I love that.
So, James and Ben, our final question that we ask everybody who comes on Talk of the Table is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is our cute way of asking for a recommendation for anything. It can be in tabletop, it can be outside of tabletop, it can be whatever you would like to share with our audience today.
I would like to share the amazing comic book series by illustrator and author Stan Sakai, who does a series called Usagi Yojimbo, multiple Eisner Award winner. It's one of the core inspirations of Ben and I, and enough people don't check it out, and it's really, really an amazing series.
The first thing I thought of when we're talking about games is, I don't think it needs my help, but it's something I've been into lately, which is Star Wars Unlimited, the card game.
Nice.
It resurrected your love for tabletop card games?
Yeah, that was something James and I did a lot of as well growing up. And I think we have a card game in ourselves too.
Mm.
Oh.
Something. There are no like firm ideas yet, but I know that we also, yeah, we want it and we have tons of art to use for it from the game.
We'll come back on the podcast in 2029.
Thank you so much for coming to the table. Ben and James, do you want to let our listeners know where they can find you online?
Sure. You can check us out at landofeam.com and you can download the free quick start guide. It's, you know, 45 plus pages of material. You can see if Land of Eam is for you or not. Check out exaltedfuneral.com if you're interested in ordering the books. There's all kinds of stuff available there that's associated to Land of Eam, including, which is kind of exciting, we're doing a Exalted Edition box set of the Rickety Stitch graphic novel series. So it's coming into print into this beautiful box set, and I'm really excited about that too.
And if you want more gaming content from us, please check out the Many-Sided newsletter and join us on the Many-Sided Media Discord, where you can chat about this and all the conversations we have here on Talk of the Table. You can support us on Patreon at the Many-Sided Media Patreon for ad-free episodes, bonus roundtables, whole bunch of other great stuff. Please rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.